Good morning and welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates, your host. Good to be with you this morning. We've got a great topic this week. As children are entrusted to us as a gift from the Lord, there are lots of things that come along with that. And as we've been learning in our household, all the responsibilities that come with having a child, lots of responsibilities. Part of that is education. We're responsible for the education and upbringing of children as parents. What does that mean? What are our options for education? So the next next 2 weeks here on Faith and Family, we're going to talk about those options, those choices in education. What are your choices? So we're going to talk with some folks, a variety of guests this week and next week, professionals in the field of education, folks who have made just decisions for their family regarding education, and it should be a good conversation for the next 2 weeks. Today, we have a great guest lined up. We're going to talk with Dr. Melanie Wilson. She's been a guest on Faith and Family before. A clinical psychologist made the decision to homeschool in their family. And we'll talk with her in just a minute here about why they made that decision and what it was like going from a professional practice to a different type of professional practice at home. If you'd like to join the conversation today, you can do so. 314-821-0850 in the St. Louis area or outside of St. Louis area, 1-800-730-2727. Again, 314-821-0850 in St. Louis or 1-800-730-2727 if you'd like to join the conversation today. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting the program. If you would like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuo.org, and then click on the sponsor section there. Click on the CUW logo, and that'll take you to their page. You can find out all about the great programs that Concordia University, Wisconsin has to offer. So, as promised, joining us by phone today is Dr. Melanie Wilson. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Wilson.
Oh, you are so welcome. I am glad to talk with you again, Andy.
Thanks for cutting out some time out of your busy schedule. I know that things are busy around the Wilson household, so we appreciate you cutting out some time for us. I'm guessing everybody is busy on projects right now.
I have gotten them occupied with their schoolwork, with their homework that doesn't require my attention, so we're good.
So you've got an hour of peace and quiet. So,
supposedly, yes.
Well, as we used to say in one of the family Bible studies participate in, we always said that we keep pressing on no matter how noisy it gets. We keep pressing on unless there's blood,
right?
And then if there's blood, then we have to stop. So, all right. So, tell us a little bit about your background. I know you've been a guest on here before, but mm-hmm. perhaps some of our listeners might not be familiar with your background. You have a background as a clinical psychologist.
Right. I went immediately from my internship with the VA hospital to working in a Christian practice, and that was, at the time, it was called Minerth Meyer New Life Clinics, mm-hmm. and I was the only female clinical psychologist, and my services were very much in demand because many people had insurance that would only take a PhD, and many people wanted to see a woman. So I had to kind of be very much of a generalist. I saw just about everything. You know, I did couples counseling. I saw children and individual problems that just were all over the place in terms of scope, and I very much enjoyed that. But then, during my first year of working after I was licensed, I decided, along with my husband, to start a family. And I was just expecting that when I had our little bundle of joy, that I was going to have the ideal arrangement of working part-time and staying home with my child part-time. And it just didn't work out the way that I thought it would. The first thing that happened was, my baby, even though he was in a really small daycare and only part-time, he kept getting ear infections. And every time I took him to the doctor said, it's because he's in daycare. And that created really a big problem for me because I would be working and the daycare would call me and they would say, he has a fever, you have to come and get him. Mm-hmm. So I would have to cancel all of my appointments. And I finally just had to come to terms with the fact that I couldn't keep doing this. It just didn't make sense. I asked my boss at the time if I could just work 2 days a week in the evenings. And we know when my husband would be home most of the time. And I arranged with my sister-in-law to watch the baby on those nights when my husband was traveling out of town. And so that's what I did until I had my second child 2 years later, 2 years after the first. And that is when I decided to stay home full time. So it was a big transition, to say the least. And I know, you know, you're interested in that, and then kind of how I got into homeschooling from that point.
Right, right.
Well, it was really, I'm just going to back up and say, because really the first crisis really in my life from going from, you know, what I thought was going to be this perfect arrangement of a career in parenting. I know it's funny now.
It wasn't at the time, I'm sure.
Right. You know, it's like anybody could have told me, oh, that's not going to go the way you are planning it. But at the time, it was really, really difficult for me. I am not from the St. Louis area where I am now and was living at the time that I had my first child. And so I didn't have, you know, all of these friends from, you know, a long history that I could get together with. Really, the only true close relationships that I had at the time were at work. And since I had quit work, I really didn't have anyone to talk to. And I was extremely lonely and really was quite depressed, quite honestly, because I just didn't feel like I had anything to offer. And I had gotten some negative comments even then about, well, you know, you're wasting your education if you're just going to stay home. And so I just felt like, wow, you know, maybe they're right. And I just don't have anything to really offer. And so then I was talking with my sister-in-law, who's a missionary, and between the two of us, we kind of came up with the idea that I could start a mom's Bible study. So I was attending church regularly, and I didn't have close friends at church, but I had some acquaintances who were also stay-at-home moms. And I asked them if they would be interested in being in a Bible study for moms, and every single person that I asked said yes. And that was really the beginning of making being a stay-at-home mom just something that I was okay with, and it wasn't so depressing anymore, because then I had people to talk with and spend time with, and then as the kids grew, you know, they had playmates, and so that was going great, but I still had every intention of sending my kids to school. And, you know, my idea was, now that I wasn't working, I was going to, you know, do all kinds of fun things. I was going to go out to lunch with my friends, and I was going to play tennis because I'm an avid tennis player. And I was going to do all these great things while my kids were in school. And I did know some people. I had a family member who homeschooled. I had one of the moms that was in my Bible study was planning on homeschooling. And so I was exposed to it, but I had absolutely no interest in it. First of all, as a psychologist, I was very concerned about the social aspects of it, and now that just makes me laugh. We can talk about that, but it makes me laugh because, you know, now that I know so much about homeschooling, I realize what an invalid concern it really is. But I just felt that the Lord had called me to be a writer and a speaker, and honestly, that's why I wanted to get my PhD. Not so that I could counsel full-time for the rest of my days, but so that I would have a platform that people would feel like I was worth listening to and reading what I wrote. And I just thought, there is no way that I can homeschool and do that too. And I really, really just fought with the Lord over this issue, because every time I tried to thwart him, like, for example, I took the idea of homeschooling to my incredibly social husband, and he said, that's great. I think that's a wonderful idea. I thought he was going to say, are you crazy? We're not going to homeschool. But he was all for it. And so I finally came to the point where I realized that if this was what God wanted me to do, and he also wanted me to be a writer and speaker, it was his responsibility to work it all out. And he absolutely has, to the point where today I say, and it's the God's honest truth, because I've had some incredible opportunities as a writer and speaker and also as a professional. But I can tell you without a doubt that homeschooling is the most fulfilling career that I've ever had. And I would give up everything else before I gave it up.
There's so much here to talk about. There are just so many paths we can take with this topic.
Yeah.
Would you say, when you were thinking about homeschool, before you even jumped into homeschooling, there were stereotypes about homeschool that later on, once you found out more, it turned out to be much different than the stereotypes you had heard or that you had even, you know, considered before?
Yes. I mean, frankly, I just thought it was weird. It was for weirdos, and I didn't want to be a weirdo at all. I tend to be more of a, I like to go off and do things that other people aren't doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that part of it I could relate to, but to me it just seemed really extreme. And so the first place that I started was in researching it. I wanted to look at what the studies actually say about homeschooling. And the thing that I was most impressed by after the academic standards, which I will tell you that homeschool children score, by eighth grade, they score 4 grade levels ahead of public school children and 1 grade level ahead of private school children. I was impressed by that, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But even more so as a psychologist and also someone who really experienced bullying as a child, I was most impressed that homeschool children have the highest levels of self-esteem of any group of children.
Hmm.
And I really wanted that for my children. Mm-hmm. I didn't want them to have to put up with the just vicious teasing that goes on at school and that our parents and our school systems haven't seemed to figure out how to deal with. I was very, very concerned about that, and I did not want to have to see my children go through what I went through as a child. So that was a big player. And then when I found out that I wasn't going to be an island doing homeschooling, that there were an incredible amount of resources, and this was back then. You know, I started homeschooling 14 years ago. And back then, there were a number of resources. There was a support group in town with a very large number of families, and there were all kinds of curriculum that was out there that would tell me what to say when I was teaching every subject and what I needed to be teaching at each grade level. And I discovered that it was so much simpler than I thought it would be. And then it was just so much more fun than I thought it would be. You know, I just thought it's just going to be grueling, you know, so much hard work on top of everything else I'm doing. I only had three kids at the time that I started homeschooling, saying only. I mean, that was still a lot. It was still a lot, but, you know, I just really thought this is just going to be so time-consuming. And it really is not as time-consuming as people think. I mean, you can put as much time into it as you want,
but
are so many subjects that you can teach all of your children together. We do Bible time together, for example. I use a curriculum called Classical Conversations that is just amazing, that teaches kids the basic facts that they need to memorize in all the main areas of study. And we do that together as a family. And we take field trips together as a family. And, you know, depending on the ages, I can do writing. I'm doing a writing class with 2 of my kids. And actually, a friend is bringing 2 of her boys over for a writing class that we're doing. And so there are just ways that you can decrease the amount of time that it takes to actually teach. And then once you have a child who is old enough to read on their own, you give them a good curriculum and you can just let them go and get their own education, and then you're just there to help fill in and, you know, help them solve problems that they don't understand. So, I mean, those are just a few things that you know, I really didn't understand. And then let's get to the socialization. You know, that's
the big one. Yeah.
Well,
I'm sure that's a big concern that many families have that, you know, think homeschool might be a good option for us in because of, you know, circumstances in our family or something like that. Mm-hmm. But they're really afraid of homeschool because they're afraid that their child is going to end up with what I would call social deficits.
Right.
That they're not going to be able to interact in the rest of society because mm-hmm. they haven't had that social interaction that they might find in a regular day school setting.
Right. First of all, God created families as the primary socialization unit, the place where we learn social skills. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially if a child has siblings, you know, that's where they learn to resolve conflict, usually poorly, but that is how we learn our social skills. We learn social skills by going to church and interacting with people at church, by interacting with our neighbors, mm-hmm. You know, everywhere we go, by interacting even with our extended family. I mean, there are so many opportunities to learn social skills. And really, the idea of an institutional school as being the primary way that we learn social skills is really a modern phenomenon. You know, some of the greatest thinkers and leaders of our time did not go to an institutional school, and yet they had incredible social skills. You know, they were, as young men, they were ambassadors to other nations for the United States. You know, and all of that, honestly, is things that I have learned in the process of homeschooling my children. I didn't know any of that before I started homeschooling. That's been such an exciting part of it for me, is to get a world-class education at the same time that I'm teaching my own children, filling in the gaps of things that I missed along the way. But back to the socialization, if you have one child and you live in a cabin in the woods, then I think you have some reason for concern because you're not going to have the support mm-hmm. that you need emotionally to be able to homeschool, because it does take a lot of help and encouragement from other people. And your kids do need to have playmates. They do need to have conflicts that they have to work out, and just somebody who shares their interests to spend time with. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing, besides everything I've just said, is that there are more social opportunities as a homeschooler, really, I think, even than there are for public or private schooled students, because I can get my kids involved in social activities all day long, and I often do. My children have been in sports classes that meet during the day. They've been taking the same PE class where mm-hmm. the kids get together and play the same kinds of fun PE games that we played when we were kids. And they do that with a whole bunch of homeschoolers who love that PE class. They take gymnastics during the day. We do field trips. And, you know, many of the institutions in the area, like the museums mm-hmm. and attractions, do special classes for homeschoolers during the day. And so we can get together maybe with a larger support group or with the small co-op that I have put together that meets in my house every week, or else we meet to do field trips. We can do that just anytime. The sheer number of opportunities for homeschooled students is honestly overwhelming. That is the biggest problem that people have with homeschooling when they commit to doing it, is deciding what to do, because it's mind-blowing.
There's so many opportunities,
things that there are to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and you're here in the St. Louis area, which the St. Louis area has a huge number of homeschooling families and co-ops and resources. It's really phenomenal just how great the resources are here in St. Louis. And I know other cities have great resources as well. And I know that, you know, Missouri has the greater St. Louis area has an annual homeschool expo. And so there are opportunities to connect with others. I want to go back to the with something you said about the family being the structure, the institution that God has provided for really for the formation and development of children, especially in, when it comes to socialization and for learning and conflict resolution, forgiveness. The family is where that happens, where that begins, and I think you. Later on this week and next week, well, this week we'll talk primarily about homeschool opportunities. Next week we'll talk about day school opportunities and some of the benefits of those and how those may work for, those may work for some families, and homeschool may be a good choice for other families. We're going to talk about those. I think the difference that you're pointing out here is that in a homeschool setting, quite often with the socialization, children are learning from their siblings, but also from parents. Learning directly from parents and other families that you connect with in homeschool, from the parents in those families as well.
Right.
So when you want children to learn something, do you want them to learn it all from other children, or do you want them to learn it from other adults that you know well?
Right.
And in a homeschool setting, you're going to know the parents well because you are the parents. I mean, you're not going to know the adults well because you are the adults, or the other families you connect with, most likely you're going to know those adults well. I think in a day school setting, and we'll get to this more next week, I think probably the importance for it to work well in a day school setting is for you to know the adults in those settings and know what kind of interaction is going to happen with the adults. If the interaction with the adults is limited in any school setting, then all they're learning is from their peers. And what do they have to aspire to? If in any setting, whether it's a day school, a homeschool, a residential school, if they're only primarily learning, if most of their social interaction is only from peers, then they're only learning how to interact with peers.
Right. And, one of the things that people will say all the time is that they notice that homeschooled students are so easy to talk to because they're comfortable talking with adults. I'm not saying that this is true of every child, not at all, because I've definitely known exceptions to this. But when you have a child who is really only interacting with peers all day, Monday through Friday, then and there's kind of like a stigma even about talking to adults, especially as they approach those middle school years. But it really does make a difference when kids don't know any different than to talk with adults as though they are peers, albeit with a higher position, a position of authority and honor and status. But it really does make a difference. I've definitely seen that in my own children, and it's something that my fellow homeschoolers, I know, we're all very concerned with that. We want our children to be open and respectful and able to communicate with people of all ages, because when kids graduate from school, even when they go to college, they're going to begin interacting with people of all ages. All ages. Really, the K through 12 environment is the place where you only interact with same age peers.
Right.
That's not real life. So when we're talking about, how can we best socialize our children, then really getting them to interact with people of all ages is better preparation for future life.
Aside from our school age years, where else in life do we interact with only people in our age group? There's nowhere else in life. There is no other place in life, no other vocation really in life in which we only interact with those in our specific age group, within a matter of 3 years.
Right.
2 to 3 years age group. There's no other place in life. So, why have we set up our education like this? And I know that's another whole thesis.
But there's a very good reason. A lot of times people say to me, I don't know how on earth you can homeschool six children. And I say to them, I don't know how on earth you as a teacher or your child's teacher can teach 25 kids in a class. That is what blows my mind. And that is what we have had to do in order to teach large numbers of children, mm-hmm. we have to put them in same age groupings, even though it doesn't really solve the problem because you have kids who are learning at a much lower level and a much slower pace than other kids in the class. So, but, you know, more and more, because I am not about bashing any school setting. I think what educators do and what parents have to do in terms of getting the best education for their child possible is a very difficult thing. And I see schools and parents really trying to make positive changes. Mm-hmm. And one of those changes is that instruction is becoming more individualized. And I think that is going to just dramatically improve education. So even if you do have a classroom full of kids who are all 6 and 7, 7 and 8, then you can still have education that's tailored to that child and moves at the pace that they're comfortable with. And I'm really excited about that because that is a huge advantage that homeschooling has over other educational opportunities right now. I think there is another one, though, that homeschooling has that other schools can't compete with, and that is the parents' interaction, the mm-hmm. parents' time, the family involvement, the relationships that get built in the family. My children enjoy one another's company. They often prefer one another's company to other children's company, and that is just so incredible to me. That is not how I grew up, I can tell you. I did not want to spend time with my brothers, and I know it was vice versa.
And that's not uncommon. Yeah. There are many families where siblings don't want to spend time with one another.
Right.
They're quite often at odds with one another.
Exactly. And I'm not saying that my children don't fight, because they do. They absolutely do. But we enjoy being together. We really do, because we have far fewer opportunities to be apart and be with other people and depending on other people for our fun, you know, and our social time. Now, that is not to say that my kids don't have friends outside of the family. We have homeschooling friends that we spend time with on a regular basis that they're very, very close to. We also have neighbor kids mm-hmm. that my children are extremely close to. And I'm so thankful that we have wonderful neighbors and wonderful children for them to spend time with. But in general, I believe that in the right circumstances, I mean, there are no perfect homeschooling families, but it can create much closer bonds in the family that I am really hopeful will last into adulthood.
Well, I have to say, you are the first in all of my guests to get me so engaged in conversation, you throw me off schedule and I missed the break. We need to take, that's okay. Good conversation. You win a trophy for that. Usually I'm pretty good about watching that. So we need to take a short break and then we'll come back in a little bit and we'll talk more about your choices in homeschool. So thanks so much. We'll stick around. More Faith and Family right after this.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of Inspiration in Action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute. The District of Columbia is trying to protect its residents. Well, some of them anyway. The health department is advocating a 24-hour waiting period before a person can get a tattoo or piercing. They want to make sure the person's in the right frame of mind, in most cases not drunk or high on drugs. But when it comes to having an abortion with far more serious side effects, they oppose a waiting period. Tattoo parlors oppose the waiting period, citing it's bad for business. The abortion industry has the same reason for opposing a waiting period for abortion. It's bad for business, and abortion's big money. The district has one of the highest abortion rates. 41% of pregnancies end in abortion. It's time to join most states with a waiting period for abortion.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Worldwide KFUO Salute Our Day sponsor on this Monday, October 7th, 2013. Today's day sponsors are Wayne and Elaine Muskopf. Today's day sponsor has made a contribution to KFUO in thanksgiving to the Lord for the many blessings He has bestowed on their family. And in honor of Wayne and Elaine's 52nd wedding anniversary, of which they are celebrating today. Once again, we say thank you to Wayne and Elaine Muskopf of Belleville, Illinois.
In 2017, Christianity will celebrate the 500th year of the Lutheran Reformation. In anticipation of this worldwide event, Worldwide KFUO is proud to present New York Metropolitan Opera star Janet Hopkins in a musical drama as told from the mind of Katharina von Bora Luther. This modern opera is performed in English. The music is melodic and fresh. Composer Dr. Glenn Winters has masterfully woven Lutheran hymnody into the score, which makes for an exciting work of art that faithfully represents Katie Luther and the Reformation. This must-see performance will be Friday, October 25th, 7 p.m. at Concordia Seminary in Clayton. For tickets, go to www.itickets.com and search for Katie Luther, or by phone at 800-965-9324. That's 800-965-9324.
This year's Catholic Mass before the Supreme Court's new term has turned into an appeal to the two deadlocked branches of government. A majority of the court, including Chief Justice John Roberts, attended Sunday's Mass at St. Matthew's Cathedral, as did members of Congress and the White House Chief of Staff. Amid the government shutdown, Bishop Kevin Farrell called for an end to partisan attacks.
We may disagree, but there can be no place for derision or smugness, especially at this time of particular polarizations.
Farrell also suggested it's time for immigration reform.
When we remove obstacles in the ways of welcoming the stranger in our midst, we then truly reflect the best of what this country stands for as a nation of immigrants.
Justices Clarence Thomas, Antonin Scalia, Stephen Breyer, and Elena Kagan joined the Chief Justice at the Red Mass. I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. And before we went to break, I had to give a prize to Dr. Melanie Wilson for being the first guest to totally throw me off track, not pay attention to the clock, and miss the break. And while we were on the break, we have a call from a listener. Let's go to Cheryl in Indianapolis, I believe. Good morning. Yes. Welcome, Cheryl.
Yeah, that's right, Cheryl. I've been listening, and I've been wishing that I could have done homeschooling for my children, and the bullying, my son didn't tell me about the bullying that it occurred to him in eighth grade. I didn't find out about it until like 20-some years later. I do believe that all parents are called by our vocation as parents to homeschool our children in the faith.
Right.
And I think, you know, we start as soon as they can handle language, and I wish I had more tools. My grandson is 1 year old this month.
Aww.
So I wish I had more tools to work with him and teach him the faith. I know it can be as simple as the prayers when you eat, and mm-hmm. and as they get older, they can memorize the Lord's Prayer. They can memorize mm-hmm. Luther's morning and evening prayers and mm-hmm. Bible verses. thanking our Heavenly Father for all his gifts through Christ Jesus. And but I want to get started as soon as I can.
I think that's so wonderful, you know, just having a grandparent, a godly grandparent, who is involved in your life can just mean so much to a child, and especially when it comes to teaching the faith. I do believe that it makes a big difference in a child's future, and you will be thrilled to find that there are some incredible resources out there. I mean, really, homeschooling has really made so many of those kinds of things available to parents in all situations, and grandparents too. Just in terms of, you know, there are curriculum, there are books that you can buy, there are even free things online that I find all the time that you can use to help a child, a young child, memorize scripture, you know, like according to the ABCs, like a scripture that starts with A and then so on and so forth. There are, you know, whole approaches to teaching faith and even apologetics that are incredible. There is a particular curriculum that I used with my children, and I've since lent it to a friend of mine who is just loving it. And it's called Answers for Kids, and it's from answersingenesis.org.
Mm-hmm.
And that particular curriculum takes kids and the parent, as you're going along with it, or the grandparent in this case, takes them through all the basics of God's creation and his word and the truth of it, and helps kids understand, you know, where science and faith intersect, and helps them to explain it to other people, why they believe the way that they do. It helps them to resist the evolutionary teaching that they're going to be getting if they go to most colleges today. It's just amazing. I am so blessed because God has been just at work in moving people to provide resources like this for parents and grandparents to really equip their kids. And, you know, we didn't know. We used to think that, maybe all we had to do was send our kids to Sunday school or send them to a Christian school, and they would keep their faith. They would be strong in the Lord. But that's not the culture that we're in now. The attacks have just stepped up so much, and there are so many people who even are Christians who say that they no longer believe that God's word is true and that we need to believe what science is telling us. And so we have to do a lot more to prepare kids for what they're going to run into later in life.
Mm-hmm. And Cheryl, there are, as Melanie said, there are plenty of resources. There are tons of resources. My wife and I are enjoying our 1 month old right now at home as well, and we've been looking for things, resources to help teach him the Word of God, and you know, a great place to start is Concordia Publishing House with the resources that they have in terms of what grandparents can do, what parents can do as well. We've been using the Story Bible. Just reading that to him. We started that actually before he was even born. We started reading the Story Bible to him, and it takes the Bible, the text of the Bible, and it's very true to the text. Keeps it in most of the time in language that children can grasp. It'll take some what you might call vocabulary words and include them before or after the story to help explain those terms. But it's a great resource, and we've been using it. Now, granted, his language skills haven't developed enough for him to grasp those stories, but we know that God works in his word, and he's powerful. His word is powerful, and he accomplishes in it that which he wants to. And he accomplishes, his word accomplishes the purpose for which he has sent it, Isaiah 55:11. So every opportunity that you have to read the word, spend time, reading the Bible to your grandchild, that's a great opportunity, a great first step. So thanks for calling today, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. But lots of great topics that you know, directions that this could go. Having important figures, adult figures in the lives of children,
it really makes a big difference in their development, in their education, in their socialization, and in faith, in faith, yeah, and formation of that faith. And I think what you're pointing out, Melanie, is that having that opportunity as a parent to be there front and center, to be a key figure in the education, the formation, the development of your children is what's important to you, and mm-hmm, and helps you to see the outcomes that you really want.
Right. And, you know, I do believe that homeschooling is a calling. Mm-hmm. I do want to really clarify that.
Sure.
I don't believe that every Christian parent has to homeschool math and homeschool science and homeschool language arts. I agree with what the caller said, that we ought to all be homeschooling the faith. But there are people who homeschooling is just not for them, either because their spouse is not supportive of it. I wouldn't recommend it in that situation. They just financially cannot make it on one salary, although I would really advise someone in that situation who wants to homeschool but just feels like they can't afford it to really take it to the Lord, to really talk with other homeschooling families who don't have a big income, mm-hmm, and who are making it work for them before they make that determination. But if it just isn't feasible, then homeschooling wouldn't be for you in this season of time. Or if it's just not something that you feel called to do. A lot of times, though, I talk with potential homeschooling parents who say, well, I'm not organized. I couldn't do it. You know, my child won't listen to me. And I don't think those are good reasons not to homeschool. I wasn't organized when I started homeschooling. I was an absolute mess. Anyone who knew me back then could tell you that, or at least who knew me well, who didn't come over after I, you know, shoved everything in the closet or the garage so they couldn't see it. But homeschooling has enabled me to be organized. It's taught me to be organized. And in terms of child discipline, that really makes me sad when people say that, because I had discipline issues with my kids, for sure. Just because I'm a psychologist doesn't mean that I didn't have problems with it. I still do.
Sure.
I still have problems because I'm not perfect. I'm a sinner too.
Mm-hmm.
And my children are sinners. But what I found is that it had to be the number one subject that we dealt with. We dealt with obedience very, very from the beginning. You know, that was the very first thing that we did. And what I say to parents who tell me that is, you know, if your child won't listen to you, you're really just putting it off, dealing with it, because they come home from school eventually. Right?
Yes.
They do.
Yeah.
They come home in the late afternoon, and they have to be willing to obey you in the evenings. And if you just keep not worrying about the fact that they're not obeying you, then they become teenagers.
Hmm.
And wow, you know, now they have keys to a car, and it's really, really scary. It's something, no matter what your educational choice, that you have to deal with, and you would be surprised at how homeschooling gives you that time, that intensive time that you can really address your child's heart and address your own too. You know, I realized the Lord showed me how impatient a person I was. I expected my child to just get it, you know, get it. and that's just wrong. I needed to be loving and patient and to try to connect with my child where he was.
I don't understand why you can't get fractions right away. It's so
You're
simple.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't be the case in our household, but.
Right. Or even, you know, I don't understand why you can't figure out how to clean this toilet right the very first time. You know,
That's really between spouses usually.
Well, I have enough kids that my kids need to know how to clean a toilet. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it really has changed my life and made me more like Christ, and absolutely has made my children more like Christ. And so if there are those heart issues that you think would prevent you from homeschooling, I hope you will reconsider and really pray about the fact that God may use homeschooling to address those very issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for some families, homeschooling is for a season. For some,
right.
It's the entire educational process.
Yes.
You know, some.
And, you know, that's what's wonderful is that it's so flexible. You can, you can try it for a year. Maybe it doesn't work. You know, I have a family member who homeschooled for a few years, and she had a full-time business, and it was becoming very difficult for her. She made the decision to put her kids into a private school at the time, and, you know, that was the right decision for her. But it was wonderful that she had the freedom to homeschool in this country, and that's something else that homeschoolers are concerned with, is maintaining that freedom. Because it is our right to be able to homeschool our children, and we want to make sure that we preserve that as Americans. But, yeah,
sure.
I mean, you can. And, you know, your child, I have my oldest child went to high school last year for the first time away from home. He is a gifted student, and he has some, different needs than my other kids do. And people always say to me, well, you know, are your other kids going to go to school? And I said, you know, I don't know, but right now they have no interest in going to school. And it's always a case-by-case, year-by-year basis that you make that decision prayerfully together with your spouse and your child.
Sure, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's what's great about it. It's never, you know, do or die, all or nothing. You can say, well, you know what, this year I'm not going to homeschool, but I'll revisit it next year. Great. And vice versa.
It doesn't have to be so rigid.
No.
That, you know, our perspective doesn't have to be so rigid.
No,
that
not
it,
at all.
It eliminates those other options.
Right.
We've got a few minutes left, and we've certainly spent some time talking about homeschool, and this conversation could keep going. But I want to go back to... You made the decision to leave your profession as a clinical psychologist in your practice, and how has that been now? How long has it been since you left the practice?
Since I left my practice, it's been 16 years.
16 years.
Well, no, I take that back. No, 15 years.
How? What's it been like being away from the practice for so long? Are you still connected with folks in that field, with professionals in that field?
A few, but, you know, 15 years is a long time.
Sure, yeah.
The practice that I was in has closed, and so I have one contact, the man who was my boss, a wonderful guy, who is practicing out of his church, and I have had a few contacts with him, and I've sent people his way. I know a psychologist who is a member of my church, and I often send church members who ask me for, you know, a referral to her, because I just don't know many people in the field anymore. It's been okay. Occasionally, people have made comments to me, you know, again, like, oh, you know, you're wasting your education or that kind of thing. But, you know, God's just blessed me unbelievably with opportunities to continue doing what I really love to do, even though I'm homeschooling. So I wrote many, many booklets for Lutheran Hour Ministries while I was still having babies and homeschooling, and that was fantastic that I had a freelance writing opportunity while I was at home. I've had the chance to speak at women's retreats, at homeschool conferences, and that's what I really love to do. And now, most recently, I have a blog, cyclewiththenumber6.com, cyclewiththenumber6.com.
And we'll link to that. We linked to it on Facebook today with our info about the show, today's show, and we'll link with the archive of today's show as well.
That's great. And I have that blog, but I am launching a podcast tomorrow for homeschoolers called The Homeschool Sanity Show.
I saw that. I thought that was new.
Yeah, so I'm excited that I've been a radio guest many, many times over the years, and I love it. And so now I get to be the interviewer. So I am loving that. So I'm doing that. And then the next big project that's on my plate that kind of brings together all the things that I love to do is I am writing my own curriculum for homeschoolers. And it's at an early stage, so I'm not going to give more details, but it just helps me to feel like I'm using the skills that, mm-hmm. that God has given me for His glory and to help other people.
Well, and that brings me to my other question. How did your previous career, your education, all the training and education to be a clinical psychologist, how has that benefited you as a homeschool, as a home educator?
Well, real and counseling psychologists, they have to do a lot of research in order to become a psychologist. Most of our time, honestly, is not spent doing clinical work in graduate school. It's spent doing research. And doing research, those research skills have been wonderful in terms of finding curriculum and even studying my own homeschoolers here at the house uh-huh. and just seeing, you know, what works for you. And then looking up educational research about, you know, well, why, you know, I had a son who just could not learn to read phonetically. He could read just by memorizing the words, but he just could not do the phonics. And, you know, when you start doing some research on that, you find out that that's actually pretty normal. There are kids that their learning style is such that it's very difficult for them to just really grasp phonics. And he's doing great now, but at the time it was kind of befuddling to me because all my other kids just, you know, took mm-hmm. to it. So that's an aspect. You know, understanding what shapes human behavior, what motivates kids has been really helpful to me. Understanding personalities, that's been huge, and I'm still learning how that applies in my children's lives. Learning about gifted children, for example. I was asked to speak on homeschooling gifted kids, and I thought, I have absolutely no knowledge of that. And I really didn't recognize that my oldest son was gifted until he was in high school, because I just thought it was normal behavior. You know, he was just mm-hmm. a smart kid. It's just fine. You know, he's an A student. And see, you don't really know when you're a homeschooler because he's not taking all these standardized tests all the time and, you know, being compared to his peers. So, again, I just thought, no, you know, he's just a good student. He's just smart. And so when I agreed to really reluctantly to give this talk on homeschooling gifted kids, I did all this research and I went, wow, that is my oldest son. And that explains so much. See, it's not about being a Doogie Howser. It's not about being this child genius. And that's really what I thought gifted was, that, you know, he would just be, you know, going to college at 10 and, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. And no, it really isn't that. It's an intellectual intensity, which he has. You know, he's a voracious learner. You just cannot satisfy his appetite for learning. And he's emotionally charged as well. He has an emotional intensity that's very characteristic of gifted kids. And then the other thing that's very characteristic is that he had a lot of questions about the faith when he got to a certain age, a lot. And that was very distressing to me until I realized that it was just a part of his giftedness, a part of his age, too, and his period of development. But, you know, all of that is psychology and research and reading about work that's been done in this field that's really helped me as a homeschooler.
What an excellent story. Just, I've really enjoyed the conversation today. I wish we could talk for like 3 more hours, but I know you have students to get back to, and we've got other shows to go on to. But thanks so much for your time today, Dr. Melanie Wilson, and author and clinical psychologist and professional home educator. And we'll provide a link to your blog as well, Psycho with Six. So we'll make sure we get a link to that on the archive today as well. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you. It was a joy.
All right. God's blessings. Coming up on the next Faith and Family tomorrow, we're going to continue our conversation with professionals who've made the jump to homeschool. We'll talk with Jackie Meyer, a teacher who made the jump to teaching at home. So we'll talk with her tomorrow and more later on this week. Stick around. Moments of Assurance up next.